A day of tree planting in Ethiopia to combat climate change and desertification. More than 350 million trees were planted on Monday, the government said. Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed led the Green Campaign and gave government employees time off to take part in the tree planting initiative. Years of deforestation, land degradation and uncontrolled water use have hit Ethiopia's lands hard. Forest coverage has declined to around 4% from 35% in the past century, according to the United Nations.
BP yet again beating forecasts on Tuesday. The oil major saw a strong increase in oil and gas production help to offset weaker crude prices. BP net income reached $2.8 billion in the second quarter. That exceeds a company forecast of just under $2.5 billion. Analysts say it's the 10th straight quarter that it's beat forecasts. Shares in BP were up 3% in early morning trade on Tuesday, outpacing the broader FTSE index.
For a company blacklisted by the U.S., Chinese tech giant Huawei is doing pretty well. In fact, the company revealed Tuesday that revenue in the first half of the year grew more than 23% compared to 15% last year. But Chairman Liang Hua said the company wasn't out of the woods just yet. Huawei is the world's largest maker of telecoms gear, but it hit hard times in mid-May after the U.S. put it on a so-called entity list, threatening the company's access to key U.S. components and software.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It's July 31st, and it's 5:09 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell. Another business day getting underway. Lots going on today. It is, of course, Federal Reserve interest rate cut day. At least we think there's going to be a cut. A little bit later on today, the Fed will announce the results of its voting after a two-day meeting wraps up. Largely expected to be a 0.25% cut in interest rates later today. That's the first time that's happened in a decade. Of course, we'll be following all of that news as we move through this hour this morning. On the program today, a new report about parents giving up custody of their kids to get need-based college financial aid. This is being reported by ProPublica, and we will have one of the reporters who's been on this story. It's been hitting virally over the last few days, and there is some response now from not only the Education Department, but from schools as well. That'll be in our first segment this morning. A little bit later on this morning, men have anxiety that looks different from women? That'll be our conversation as we dip into a health talk this morning. A little bit later, 5:38, Andrea Peterson, a health reporter at the Wall Street Journal, will be here to talk about anxiety and health issues. That's, again, 5:38 this morning. We'll also follow the latest markets. We'll get to those momentarily. News, weather, sports, and traffic as we move through the 5 o'clock hour. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The opening bell rings this morning after stocks ticked down slightly yesterday after comments from President Trump dampened hopes for a trade agreement with China. At the closing bell, the Dow Jones down nearly 23 points. The NASDAQ fell 20. The S&P was down about 8 points on the day. This morning, the futures market pointing toward gains on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures were up 77 points, nearly 0.25%. S&P futures were up nearly 0.25%. NASDAQ futures are up nearly 0.5% this morning. Around the rest of the globe in Europe, markets are mixed. In London, lower by nearly 0.5%. In Germany and France, a little bit higher. In Asia, the market day is ending in the red. In Japan, off nearly 187 points. The Nikkei down nearly 0.75%. In Hong Kong, down nearly 1.33%. And in China, off nearly 0.5%. And oil is trading at $58.38 a barrel, which is up about 33 cents. Couple of stories as we begin this morning. Apple, again, worth $1 trillion after reporting better-than-expected third-quarter earnings. The tech giant brought in about $53.8 billion compared with estimates of $53.3 billion. Shares went up about 4% in after-hours trading. Fake websites are popping up in the wake of the Equifax data breach settlement. The company reporting that it is settling with people over this breach that happened in 2017 that exposed the data of 150 million people. Those affected can get $125. The Federal Trade Commission warned this week that scammers are already setting up websites that are practically identical to the official one in an effort to steal more data. The authentic site can be accessed through FTC.gov/Equifax. And the Kroger company, a Kroger grocery store, is starting to charge shoppers who get cash back when they pay with debit cards. Kroger is adding the fees because banks are charging the supermarket giant fees for cash back transactions. Fees are small for purchases up to $99.99. It's 50 cents for $100 to $150. It's $1.50. Fee is $3.50 for cash back on totals of $150 to $2,000 and $6 for totals between $2,000 and $9,999. There's no fee for cash back on totals under a dollar. Kroger is the parent company of Mariano's in the Chicago area. Let's begin this morning front and center. An investigation by ProPublica says some families have been exploiting a legal loophole to win their children need-based college financial aid and scholarships that they otherwise would not be eligible to receive. Joining us this morning to have a conversation about this reporting is Dua El-Deeb, a reporter at ProPublica. Dua, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
This story, really good reporting, blowing up in recent days. There's been even reaction now from a number of different areas, but I want to begin with you by talking about the size and scope of what's going on here and how big of a problem or how big of a situation this is.
So we just looked at Lake County, and what we found in Lake County was about four dozen families that have done this. And basically what they've done is they have given up legal guardianship of their children in order for those children then to qualify as independent. And by doing so, those children are able to get financial aid, not based on their parents' incomes, but on their own earnings as, you know, a student.
Is this, and we mentioned that this is probably not what they're supposed to be doing, but is what they're doing illegal, or is there, have they found a loophole?
So it's legal, as far as we know, as far as everyone is telling us, this is legal, this is allowed. But the people that we have talked to, you know, for example, University of Illinois, the director of admissions there has called it a scam. The Department of Education, you know, has called it, you know, a potential student aid fraud. So there are really a lot of questions surrounding kind of the moral and ethical backing behind this tactic.
Four dozen kids in Lake County, it makes you wonder what the rest of the state looks like. If you were to examine county by county, what do you think you might find?
So we're continuing to investigate, but like we said, this is just in Lake County, and this is just over the last year and a half. And so, you know, going through this whole process starts at the courthouse. And so, you know, the way that it works according to Illinois law is a parent can, you know, give up custody, give up guardianship of their child if the minor agrees, the parents agree, and the judge decides that's in the best interest of the child. And typically these guardianships are used for parents who are in really difficult situations. So cases where, for example, you know, a parent is homeless and unable to care for their child, or a parent is in prison or deported or kind of having these really dire straits, and so they need to give up the guardianship of their child to someone else. And you'll find them, a lot of these cases, you know, happen when the child is younger. But in these cases specifically, we found that this was happening in the child's junior or senior year. And they're really guardianships, as far as we can tell, pretty much on paper only.
And, you know, sometimes a friend, an aunt, a cousin, grandparent, as you've put in your reporting here, is the likely new guardian of the young person. And, you know, as you mentioned, that's, those things are done in very serious situations. This is, I mean, the fact that this has gone all the way through a judge and a judge has seen this makes it even more questionable, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, so I think two points there in terms of who the guardians are. Yes, I mean, sometimes these are, you know, grandparents in their 70s, and, you know, we reached out to some of them. And typically what we found is these guardianships are lasting a very short amount of time. So we talked to, you know, one guardian who's like, you know, this was just for a month, and then the child turned 18, and then I was no longer their guardian. And so it happens, again, just for a very short amount of time. And in terms of the judge, so according to Illinois law, it does have to go before a judge. And so when this was happening in Lake County for a while, you know, without anybody really taking a second look at it, and then there was a judge there, Judge Joseph Salvi, who heard a case recently. You know, he just started hearing these cases, and he was really surprised by them, and he kind of put a halt to it.
The reporting has a story about a financial aid, advisor at the University of Illinois. And you know, the story recounts how there was a particular student that had been invited to an orientation program for low-income students. Tell us about how officials at some schools have come onto this.
Yeah, so like I said, these are families that don't qualify for financial aid. You know, these need-based financial aid programs, you know, federal, state, and university-based financial aid. And so in order, once they become, you get a legal guardian, then you can qualify for these financial aid, need-based financial aid dollars. And so there was an admissions director at the University of Illinois, Andy Boers, who got a call from a high school counselor in an affluent suburb who was like, wait, I'm really confused. I have a student here who's been invited to a, you know, orientation program for low-income students, and the student does not, you know, qualify for that. So then, you know, he went back and he, you know, looked at the paperwork and he found that, oh, wait, she had obtained a legal guardianship, which without it, she would, you know, there's no way she would have been invited to this program. So then he went back and the university went back, decided to look at their other students to see if this was just a one-off. And they found 14 students who had done it, three who had just finished their freshman year, and then 11 who are going to enroll this fall. And so that's really kind of what started this. And then we reached out to other universities, including University of Missouri, where we know at least one student is going. And they said that they are also now starting to look at this, because if they said, you know, if the students are doing this just to get financial gain, if this guardianship is, you know, not what they would consider legitimate, then they are going to, they made a decision that they're going to pull institutional financial aid. So they're obligated to give, you know, state and federal aid, but the money from the university, you know, they're going to take that back.
Dua Eldeeb is with us, a reporter at ProPublica this morning. Dua, I know you mentioned this earlier in our conversation, that there's been some reaction to this. I know the U.S. Department of Education has also reacted with perhaps an effort to close this loophole.
That's right. I mean, there's been a lot of outrage after the story was published. It's really struck a nerve. So in terms of, federal officials, yesterday we heard that the, you know, U.S. Department of Education Office of Inspector General is suggesting clarifying language on these financial aid forms. And basically they're saying that, you know, what they're trying to do is ensure that anyone who's involved in this kind of guardianship will no longer qualify for financial aid if they are getting medical and financial support from their parents. And that's at the federal level. And then at the state level, you know, the Illinois Attorney General's office said that there are concerns and they're going to look into the matter. And then we also heard from state lawmakers who were also very angry once they learned about this, and said that they are looking at possible legislative efforts and talking to the governor's office and different state agencies.
Give us a sense of how many people may have been. I guess I'm asking you to put a dollar number on this. We have so many kids who are applying for financial aid, tens of thousands of them, and I'm guessing some of them who had real financial need didn't get it because of these students.
You're correct. I mean, these are need-based scholarships. So in Illinois, you know, there is the state monetary award program, the MAP grants. And so last year alone, there were around 82,000 students who were eligible for the grant but didn't get it because there wasn't enough money. It's a first-come, first-serve grant. And so once the state runs out of money, then they're no longer able to give it to other students. So because these students received that grant, other students were unable to get it.
Yeah, and I think the larger conversation here, and this is probably, we can do another program on this another day, this is really sort of a symptom of the cost of college. We've had this discussion. It was a front and center last night, again, in the Democratic debate about free college, but college has become so expensive that people are doing just about anything to try to afford it.
It keeps, the cost of college keeps going up, and, you know, the lawyer, one of the lawyers in these cases was saying, like, look, these are hardworking families. These are families whose incomes were too high, but they still struggled to pay for college. And this is how they were able to get around that. I talked to one family member who said, you know, look, if we could pay $200,000 for college, we would have. But that's something that would, you know, require 50 years of paying up, student loans, and that's just not something that, you know, we were ready to do. You know, I think they said something like, you know, like, and that's not living. And so this was the way that we did it. Otherwise, it would have been a big burden on our family or, you know, and on the student.
Dua, what's the next step in your reporting and the ProPublica's reporting on this? I'm guessing you have several different areas to go forward on.
Yeah, there's a lot of different threads to pull here. I mean, I think one of the things that we're interested in is looking at just how widespread it is. So we looked at Lake County, but we understand it's also happening in Kane, Will, DuPage, Cook, McHenry. So I think that's one of the things we want to look at. And then also the question of, you know, what can be done, what response is going to be to this. So we're going to keep reporting. If anybody knows anything else more, they're welcome to give us a call, email us, or go to ProPublica.org and tell us more about it.
All right. Dua, we appreciate you being with us this morning and sharing this reporting with us.
Thanks again.
All right. Dua Eldeeb, a reporter at ProPublica. Again, you can find the story, and we'll link out to it as well, one of the latest stories at ProPublica.org. There's also a donate button in the upper right-hand corner to donate to continue this type of extraordinary reporting, investigative reporting, again, at ProPublica.org.
WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on a Wednesday edition of The Opening Bell. Our focus turns to the business of health, specifically anxiety. Research shows that 1 in 5 men and about 1 in 3 women will have an anxiety disorder sometime during their lifetime. Psychologists have become increasingly concerned that perhaps in men those numbers are underreported a bit. Joining us this morning to talk a little bit about this is Andrea Peterson, health reporter at the Wall Street Journal and author of On Edge, A Journey Through Anxiety. Andrea, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Steve.
First of all, I love your reporting because, and also, you know, the focus on anxiety, because I think a lot of, whether it be men or women, this is something daily that a lot of us deal with.
Right. And, you know, first of all, I want to say that anxiety is a normal human emotion, and actually a certain amount of it is a good thing. I mean, it can motivate us to, you know, prepare for that big work presentation or, you know, for go to the doctor if we're feeling a little off. But it becomes a disorder when it starts impairing your life, when it's so serious and constant that it prevents you from, it starts affecting your work and your relationships, and that's when it becomes a disorder.
Your latest reporting and writing on this in the Wall Street Journal focuses in on men specifically. Talk to us a little bit about why there is the concern about focusing, turning the spotlight on men in this issue.
Right. Well, a couple things. There's a growing acknowledgement that anxiety can look different in men, and so it's more likely to be missed by doctors. You know, when a lot of people think about anxiety, they think about, you know, someone who worries a lot or who avoids situations that might be frightening, like public speaking. But in men, anxiety can look different. I mean, men, of course, worry and you know, fit that picture as well. But they're also more likely to complain of things like headaches and stomach aches and difficulty sleeping and muscle pain. They're more likely to self-medicate with alcohol and drugs. So what looks like a drinking problem could actually really be an underlying anxiety disorder. And often anxiety looks like anger and irritability in men. So, you know, a guy who is a loose cannon, who, you know, is yelling at people who are cutting him off on this, you know, while he's driving, he may actually not just be, he might not be a jerk. He actually might be anxious.
Yeah. And the reason why
I just want to say that, anxiety disorders can be really, they can, really wreak havoc on people's lives, affecting their work and relationships. But also psychologists are really concerned about this because there's a growing amount of research showing a link between anxiety and suicide. And what they're finding is that anxiety is, people who are anxious have a higher risk of suicide. And as listeners might know, men are much more likely to die by suicide than women are. So there's real concern that not only is anxiety a problem, but, can have deadly consequences.
Yeah, and so on that note, we often think of depression as being what leads to suicide in mental illness. So talk to us about what the answer is here. To get more treatment, I'm guessing, or just to have men talk more about their feelings?
Right. I mean, the thing is, there's really good treatments for anxiety disorders. The two treatments that have the most sort of research behind them and are quite effective is a talk therapy called cognitive behavioral therapy, which basically involves only 12 to 15 sessions with a therapist where you learn to change the thoughts that fuel anxiety, these sort of negative thoughts that fuel anxiety, and also learn to, practice approaching those situations that make you afraid. I talked to one man who had a real hard time driving on highways. He would basically have panic attacks, and his therapist actually had him, of course, drive on highways, because what happens is, you do it over and over and over again, and you learn that, what you fear is going to happen doesn't happen. And you're able to do it. And not only that, but the therapist had him drink coffee beforehand to sort of up those feelings of anxiety. And that actually helped him get over it more. Also, SSRI medications, antidepressant medications like Prozac and Lexapro, those have also been found to be effective and help curbing anxiety.
Your story, you talk about a couple of cases about how just serious this is in terms of impacting work. You mentioned suicide earlier. That's the worst outcome of all of this. But from just a daily living with this sort of sense, impacting work is probably, so your boss or your coworkers might likely see this first.
Right. I mean, often what actually, I'm talking to psychologists, what brings men into treatment is often, a work crisis, like that the anxiety is affecting their work. Or often it's a spouse or a loved one who encourages a man to get treatment. And, one thing, I was talking to a lot of, because the reality is that men are much less likely to receive mental health treatment. I mean, for, some men, of course, are very comfortable talking about their emotions and using terms like anxiety and depression, but a lot of men aren't. There's still this sort of, a lot of societal expectations that, make it, difficult, can make it difficult for men to talk about their emotions and to express some vulnerability. So I talked to a lot of therapists about, how, especially if spouses are the ones or partners are the ones who often are able to get men into treatment, what's the best way to sort of encourage a man that you love to get help for anxiety? And, they have some really interesting and important, I think, suggestions. One was, first, don't give an ultimatum. Don't say, okay, you get help or else, because that can lead to a power struggle and actually increase someone's resistance to treatment. Instead, highlight the ways that his quality of life is suffering and how it could improve with treatment, that you'll enjoy your life so much more. You'll be more effective at work. We can enjoy each other a lot more if you're able to get help with this. Convey your own distress about your loved one's suffering, how it's affecting you, how you're really worried about him and having trouble sleeping. Also, just be really compassionate. Try not to view him as sort of being stubborn, acknowledge that not only is this person dealing with anxiety and depression, but also dealing with a pretty heavy burden of sort of societal expectations of you know, what it means to sort of be a man and not be vulnerable. And one other thing is that some men find it useful if you avoid diagnostic labels. You know, I actually talked to one therapist who, you know, didn't bring up anxiety in the first few sessions of treatment. And another therapist said that, you know, some men are more comfortable calling it, you know, coaching or, you know, help with work distress. So that can also make it seem a little less threatening.
Yeah, and those are great pieces of advice, and I wonder how much we men need to have these conversations with our male friends. Would it be better coming in that sort of a context, in that sort of a setting where we're, you know, out with our buddies fishing or doing whatever we're doing and having this conversation?
Yes. And another thing that some therapists said that, you know, a lot of men are socially isolated. And especially when you're dealing with anxiety, it can actually cause people to sort of pull back from friends and family even more so. So, you know, and the thing is, loneliness and social isolation can, of course, make those feelings of anxiety even worse, make the symptoms worse. So, yes, you know, one therapist I talked to really encourages, you know, group therapy and even sort of, you know, anonymous groups that can some men are more comfortable with. But, yes, having those social relationships, being able to open up to friends and family is incredibly important in someone's own recovery.
Well, we appreciate you being on with us this morning and sharing some of this with us. And, you know, 1 in 5 men, that's a lot of men that this could potentially be impacting.
That's right. And the thing is that there are good treatments out there and there is help out there. So there's a lot of hope around this.
Andrea, we appreciate it. Again, thank you for being on with us this morning.
Thanks so much.
Andrea Peterson, a health reporter at the Wall Street Journal, also author of On Edge, A Journey Through Anxiety. We're going to link out to her story in the Wall Street Journal at WSJ.com with the podcast of The Opening Bell a little bit later on this morning.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street. Dow futures up nearly 0.25% this morning, up 57 points. NASDAQ futures are up fractionally. S&P futures are up fractionally. NASDAQ futures are up nearly a third FOMC announcement day today, 1 o'clock Chicago time. Let's get the latest from agriculture and commodity now. Here's Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Well, sometimes a small change in crop conditions will have an impact, because yesterday we saw the most active corn contract down 6 cents because of disappointment in the Monday report from USDA that said the U.S. corn crop was in better condition than analysts expected. But if you'll recall, it said 58% of the corn good to excellent. That was up just 1% from a week ago. Now, the closing prices at the board yesterday, wheat settled down 6.25 cents a bushel, soybeans down 7.5 cents a bushel, and corn down 6 cents a bushel. And, of course, trade talks continue to dominate much of the market activity. Again, the lean hog contract at the Mercantile Exchange extended losses yesterday because of concern over the China-U.S. trade situation, helping to push prices to their lowest levels in about 2 weeks. We saw the October lean hogs down $2.45 a hundredweight. And the October live cattle contract ended down 37 cents a hundredweight. And that's a check on the markets. Opening day today at the McHenry County Fair in Woodstock. Getting underway today. That will continue through Sunday, and it's a good one. So we hope you'll enjoy. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. A couple more stories before we leave you this morning. Hotels have been being challenged to do something about all of the plastic that they create, and it looks like at least one big chain is getting ready to do something about it. Holiday Inn is ditching those small bottles to help save the environment. All mini toiletries will be replaced with bulk size supplies by 2021. That affects about 840,000 hotel rooms in more than 5,600 hotels worldwide. The chief executive of Intercontinental Hotel Group says it was the next logical step after announcing a plastic straw ban late last year. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook, job creation in June tops the economic reports for this Wednesday, July 31st. The ADP private payrolls report is out for June. The economists are forecasting 148,000 private sector jobs were created last month. That would be a big advance over May's total of 102,000. This afternoon, the Federal Reserve's policymaking board expected to announce a cut in short-term interest rates. The Federal Open Market Committee is scheduled to make that announcement at 1 o'clock Chicago time, following that news briefing with the Federal Reserve Chairman. Also today on the earnings calendar, Molson Coors, Hyatt Hotels, CME Group, Qualcomm, and Occidental Petroleum, among the companies reporting quarterly financial earnings. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Wednesday, July the 31st.